In the 1990s, many hospitalists were subsidized in some fashion. These were physicians who were working for their own, let's say, internal medicine practices. And these were the physicians who liked being in the hospital. And what they would do is they would take call for their partners so that their partners didn't have to come to the hospital. And they would oftentimes either get whatever payment there might have been involved for taking a night of call from the hospital itself and subsidy, or there might have been some sort of incentive to take call from the practice, but that was far less common. So that was one form of subsidy. The next thing that happened was that a lot of practices considered and actually did employ someone to actually be their hospital rounder. And in that case, a person was subsidized in a less direct fashion, but they would be given a guaranteed salary, and they would have a varying number of patients from day to day. But that would keep the 5 or 10 or however many patients in that practice from having to come into the hospital because Dr. So-and-so was there. And I actually know a physician in Grand Rapids who did this. This is how their hospital's practice started. So she was subsidized, too. I'm not really aware of a time where hospitalists in the beginning weren't subsidized. In one way or another, they were given a guaranteed salary to round on patients for their partners, and they didn't know how many they'd have on a given day. Or they were taking call or the less desirable shifts from the hospital, which generally had some sort of monetary fee attached to it.
How is the current system viewed by both sides, both the hospital and by HM practitioners? I mean, is it a necessary operating expense? Is it a necessary evil? Is it a system that needs tweaking? How do both sides sort of go into the scenario and look at it?
Well, okay, so I think, so there's hospitalists, we'll do them first. In the hospitalists, you've got two groups. You have those who receive subsidy support and those who do not. And they will view this differently. Among those who do not receive hospital subsidy, they tend to be in practices that may be able to operate with a bit more autonomy. In other words, they can do more of what they want and turn down a number of things that they may not want to do. They can also seek out higher paying patients. In other words, sometimes referred to as cherry picking, but they can seek out a higher paying patient source, those who have certain types of insurance or are coming in with certain types of procedures from some practices, which may allow them then to make more money per patient. But in general, I would say that they probably also see more patients or have to see more patients to generate income than those who don't receive subsidy. So the unsubsidized practice has the advantage of being able to pick and choose what type of patient it wants to see. On the other hand, they may, in fact, I would say they almost often certainly have to see more patients per provider per given shift in order to generate the same income as a subsidized practice would. A subsidized practice has a different set of challenges. They are going to have an easier time recruiting because they're providing a model that younger physicians want. That model is something that is more guaranteed, something that's more structured, and will be more likely to provide them a guarantee that has fewer shifts per year and fewer patients per shift because of the subsidy support. Therefore, the subsidized models, at least at present, are more sustainable from a recruitment and retention standpoint. They just have an easier time getting people to fill those slots.
When you talk about the different viewpoints of subsidized versus unsubsidized physicians and how they view that process, in terms of sustainability of the subsidy, how do you view that, and do you think they look at it differently as well? Does perhaps an unsubsidized group say, well, that amount of money just can't keep going out the door because hospitals don't have the cash? Or what I've heard from a lot of subsidized groups is that, look, this isn't just a subsidy. This is an investment, and it's being returned to you multiple fold via our efficiency in the hospital and our roles on QI committees and non-clinical, non-revenue-producing activities. How do you see that?
I think, you know, where the rubber meets the road is that everyone makes decisions based on two factors involved in what they want out of a medical practice. And one is certainly patient care and how they view themselves as helping their patient population. And then the other is economics and how what they do impacts their bottom line and their paycheck. and that's inescapable. So the unsubsidized practice, which I'm not in, the unsubsidized practices, they may view this as unsustainable, but I really don't know. I think subsidized practices certainly look at what they do and understand that they're involved in a whole variety of activities in the hospital that help the hospital function and maintain the scores and the criteria and the regulatory machinery that keeps it doing its mission. So certainly I would say that hospital's practices return on investment is going to be much more than what the hospital pays out in subsidy, as long as both sides agree to recognize it as such. I think many hospitals don't recognize or don't want to calculate how many millions of dollars a hospital's practice is involved in bringing into their system and keeping from going away through a pay-for-performance structures.